RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Let's do another Tech Tuesday here at RCR. Tuesday morning, Stephen Sykes. Hi, Stephen.
G'day, how you doing? Good morning.
I'm good. Great to have you back. I'm looking forward to getting to the news a bit later. We're going to do it in a slightly different order. We're going to start with some feedback, then into the main topic, because you've got quite a bit to say about that. It's around hacking. And then we'll, if we've got time, we'll dip into some of the tech news stories from the last week. All right, who have we heard from? And what are they asking? What are they saying?
So Denise and Rick are wondering about what to do because they've said that, they write, just wondered if this has been up for discussion at all. We live rurally and are unable to connect with our internet provider for a landline. This leaves us vulnerable in a disaster as it did in Gabriel. We'd be interested in any reports or discussion you may have had on this topic on your tech programs. They also include some information that they have received as what they could do for an alternative, and they list a satellite solution for a phone in addition to broadband service. So you're looking at Starlink for that kind of thing. A wireless solution, which is not satellite, for the same sort of thing. And then the other option, if you can call it one, is do nothing at all and you end up with nothing.
Okay. You've got to be in the zone of a cell site to do the hotspotting, right?
Yes. Yeah. To get rural broadband.
But yeah, and that's probably not that likely in a lot of areas.
Yeah. The satellite solution is probably the best, and that's exactly what they used with when Gabriel smashed into the North Island, because they jerry-rigged a Starlink system into the cashier at supermarkets to get internet access.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Thank you, Elon.
And those things just flew off the shelves. People were just buying them left, right, and center in order to get that kind of connectivity. So unfortunately, you know, with things like copper disappearing and the fact that copper had its day, it was fine at the time, but it did have various issues, like didn't have the throughput that fiber has, for example, and it was susceptible to temperature. And the fact that parts for maintaining these older systems just simply aren't around anymore because the world moved on.
Well, you could steal the chips out of washing machines like Putin has for his weapons. In the end, it'll all be space-based, won't it? That's what I'm thinking.
It could be very much eventually like that, yes.
And you'll just have agencies signing people up to whatever the overhead service is rather than having their own infrastructure, I'm picking.
Yeah, sort of like electricity retailers.
Yeah, yeah. We don't like them very much at the moment. Talk to Shane Jones. All right, so there's that. What else?
So this is from Dave from a couple of weeks ago. He goes, hey, Stephen, my Lineage OS phone is going great. No problems at all. This was a phone that I de-Googled for him. And he says, but there may be another option. Have a look at the structure of above phone. I'd be very interested in your opinion on this implementation on the Google Pixel hardware. And Hakeem was a guest on Tech Tuesday some weeks ago.
He was,
and the above phone is built upon a de-Googled operating system known as Graphene OS, which might be an unfortunate name in our circles. But they've built on top of a de-Googled operating system already, and they bundle with the phone a whole bunch of applications that you actually already have on your Lineage phone because I already installed them for you.
Okay.
But they also create an entire ecosystem as well. So it's basically a one-stop shop that has all that kind of stuff for you. The phones are expensive because Google Pixel phones are expensive. The cheapest you're kind of looking at is, $600-$700 US plus shipping, and cross fingers that customs don't nab you with GST on top.
Yeah, but still it's still a small amount if you want to, stay anonymous. Is that the
but at the same time, there's other ways you can do it. And
yeah, there's you.
Well, yes. There's cheaper ways of achieving pretty much the same thing.
Gotcha.
In my opinion.
All right. We value your opinion. Don't you worry. Okay, so we're going to do some news towards the end, but you want to talk about hacking and this question, have you been hacked?
Yeah. So what I wanted to talk about was just to go for a very, start off with a very simple angle, because we get into the deep end real thick. You'll just hear me speak words and have no idea what I'm saying. So the idea is to try and figure out if you think you have been hacked. A lot of the times you might think you are, but you're not. Like, I recall one time someone bought me a laptop and they said, I think I've got a virus. Mm. And so they showed me their laptop, and what was happening on the desktop was jumping between two icons as if they had been selected.
Right.
And intuition said to me, look at the name of the icons. And they both started with R. And I thought, okay, looked at the keyboard. Yep, I think the R key is stuck.
Ah. that's very clever of you.
So you need to figure out what is unusual behavior and then discern, like, well, what's actually going on here? I mean, the knee-jerk yep. reaction is, yes, I have been hacked, but that might not be the case. You just might have found a bug in software, or you've got a sticky keyboard.
Right, so, and that's trying to punch the R in repeatedly because it's stuck down.
Yeah, yeah. So it was just in this case, it wasn't bouncing up. But
okay.
The first things to look out for are, is your computer going a lot slower? And if you've eliminated the fact that it's not doing any software updates and your computer is still sprightly in at the best of times, there's a good chance that there is malware on the system, and that malware is using your computer as a resource. It could be part of a botnet to at some point launch an attack on other computer systems, or somebody just maybe using it to mine crypto. There was actually, I can't remember the name of it, but there was a browser plugin you could install that did crypto mining on your machine via your web browser.
Oh, I see. They're using it for mining.
Yeah, for mining. And there was a long time ago various apps you could get on your phone that provide you with a torch, which are now deprecated because phones have the torch feature built in anyway. But they'd have malware built in because everyone would go and install a torch app, because torches are handy. And it would be a really big application. It would be many megabytes in size, which is pointless because all it's doing is turning the LED on and off. You don't need a massive application for that. But it would have malware built into it.
Yeah, got
and
it.
Then, yep. So then, and then things go downhill from there. So even if you don't have any enemies in the state, as I said, your computer is just seen as a resource to get computational
work done. We all have enemies in the state now.
Yeah, I think we do.
Stephen, sorry.
It's a badge of honour.
It's going to be the default now. Yep.
Yeah. The other thing that your machine could be used for is password cracking of other systems, trying to do brute force attacks.
So that would be intense use of the CPU.
Yep. Or if your machine is so equipped, then, and the malware is intelligent, it'll be using your graphics card because it's higher performance.
Right. Okay, got it.
And another thing to look out for is strange behavior. So when things aren't working the way they used to, and not just, as I said, because of an operating system update, potentially there is updates which completely do screw up your computer. But if you see weird stuff, like your mouse cursor is shifting around the screen all by itself and you're not touching it, that's an absolute yep. red flag right there. You
that's remote desktop.
Nuked. That's pretty much that. Yep, that's exactly what's going on. And of course, if you're not covering over your camera, then you probably ought to. You could always disable your camera in your machine's BIOS and then just plug in an external one over USB so you can unplug it and plug it in when you need to. Then you've got unusual activity in your email or your messaging apps. So if you're getting emails from people that you didn't send them one to, or you can't access your email or your messaging apps, then that can be a fairly decent indication. So data breaches happen on a daily basis, and we'll talk about one of those later on if we get a bit of time. And these database breaches are particularly corporate, and these can often include your email address and a password, and it's common knowledge that these sorts of things end up on the dark web, which then can be used to log into various applications. So like the first thing people are going to try and do with your credentials is try and log into a Netflix account and take it over. Banking is another one. They will try and log into banking apps, and is another way to try and draining out your hard-earned pingers.
Yeah, but if you've got the, because when I do internet banking, it asks, is it you? You know, yes, it is. No, it's not.
Yeah.
And presumably, though, if you could hack someone's computer, you'd have to get that on your phone somehow, wouldn't you? So that's a...
Well, if you can end up doing password change requests. So that would end up locking you out of something because of the password. Okay. You can't log anymore because someone else has successfully changed the password on an account you have for something. And then that would be an indicator if all of a sudden I can't log into this, I can't log into that, then that's a brown pants moment right
there. That's a bad feeling.
Yeah.
Brown pants.
That's a bad feeling.
Yeah, no kidding. All right. Okay. So... the hackability of the average machine is through what? Something that you've downloaded by mistake or inadvertently? Because they've got to get something on your machine, don't they?
Yeah, and sometimes that's through a phishing scam, like an email that's crafted to look like it's authentic and it contains links that if you hover over them and not click on them, they could look really, really... obscure.
Yeah.
Of course, some of those could be tracking links and you wouldn't necessarily know if it was a legitimate tracking link or illegitimate tracking link. But what people often do is they take advantage of the fact people don't pay attention. So they might change a letter like an O to a zero because you might miss that and other things like that. And an L could become a one. Very, very subtle things that if you're not paying close attention, you'll miss it.
What about the default virus scanners and defenders and stuff like that in operating systems? Or, I know Windows sort of gives me a report every time. I don't even know what's going on in the background until it flicks up and says, no issues. Is that something that can find the malware, or is it a matter of trying to stay ahead of that? And so there's a lag between what's being used and what's being detected. How does that work?
There's definitely the cat and mouse game, and that's something to look out for as well. If your antivirus software is disabled and you know you didn't do it, that's a good indication that is a potential indication that your computer has been compromised. Because if it's been disabled and the malware turns up, then you're antivirus, anti-malware software will then miss it.
Yep.
Okay. Other things to look out for are unexpected pop-ups or redirects, so that when you're in your web browser, if you get new tabs that open up directing you to another site, which can be an indication that the first site you went to has malware on it or your web browser's being hacked. But most modern browsers these days will try to protect you from this sort of thing, including blocking pop-ups. And, of course, there are some sites that legitimately use blocking pop-ups, so you sort of need to have a little bit of analysis to what appears normal. And then if you want to check to see if your email address and password has been involved in a dark web data dump, you've got Have I Been Pwned and Dehashed websites. Both of these sites are showing around 14.3 billion accounts that have been published in the dark web. So make sure you change your password regularly. And I always say use a different password for every single account, which can be annoying, but then you've got a password manager to wrangle this for you and will remember stuff so that your brain doesn't have to. Also look out for unknown charges on credit cards. This doesn't always mean that someone has your credentials. I refer you to my example at New World when someone had just figured out the numbers on there.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then after you've taken all that stuff into account, then you can look at the task manager on Windows and see what's running.
Okay, yeah, that's a giveaway, isn't it? I know about that. That shows everything that's running.
Yes. If you see something that is using a lot of computer time, then that could be an indicator. But at the same time, in order to try and fit in to not arouse suspicion, these malware programs have names that make it look like it's supposed to be there.
Yep.
So they have names that are similar to the normal processes, so they can be a tricky indicator. But that's a good place to go and see. So if you see something you're not sure about it, kill it. And if the rest of your machine keeps working, then maybe that was something your malware software did not pick up. I don't run any on Linux. I run nothing at all.
Okay. 14.3 billion accounts. There's only 8.2 billion people in the world.
Yeah,
the world.
But when you have multiple accounts for different things, that is easy to obtain that number.
Number, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a jungle out there.
Yes. And then you need to consider, like, what does compromised mean? So according to the National Institute for Standards of Technology, or NIST for short, they develop a whole bunch of cybersecurity standards. It is determined as the disclosure of classified data to persons not authorized to receive that data. So that's basically any data that's kind of yours, that's private to you, that you don't want to give away without your knowledge or consent. But if you think about it, that's kind of exactly what Apple and Google do all the time.
Yeah, right.
Although we are talking more about third parties, and what was a really big issue was the Pegasus attack. This was something that when Legacy Media got round to talking about it, they asked Andrew Little, who was head of was it government?
GCSB
It was head of GCSB, so I'm not sure exactly what portfolio that would come under, but he was asked on camera if the New Zealand government had ever used Pegasus, and he said no. So you can take that answer however you wish.
The gene therapy a vaccine, so.
Well, yeah, exactly. But the Pegasus attack was software that was caught in the wild in 2016. And Amnesty International had estimated that across dozens of countries, thousands of users had their phones affected by this. And this was an issue mostly with iPhones. And at first, one of the ways you can get attacked is by receiving a text message, and it's got a link in it. And the Pegasus attack started off with sms.webadv.co, and then /, and some number, and if you click on that, that would get into your phone. It would jailbreak your iPhone. It would remotely install software which allowed the remote recording of the camera, the microphone, the calls you made through WhatsApp, and it would log what you did in applications and track all your movements. Then it got a little bit more sophisticated because it was it migrated to a zero-click attack, meaning that you as the user didn't have to do a damn thing in order to get affected. All that had to happen was that somebody, knowing your Apple iCloud account, could send you one of these messages via iMessage.
Okay, so it looks like Apple's sending it.
Well, it doesn't look like Apple sending it, but you just need to receive a message via iMessage with this information in it, and the phone would process the data, and then game over.
Okay.
That's
it. Gotcha.
You're done. Yep. It didn't have to come from Apple. You could anyone could do it.
Oh dear. Well, and how can you defend yourself against that?
Well, you can't. There was a lockdown mode that Apple had been saying that you could use, but then it kind of rendered most of the phone useless.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And this is the danger that I've seen with it's not a very nice term in some ways, but people say use the term Mac fanboys because they're loyal to the brand through and through and think that they can never do any wrong. This issue with the Pegasus attack, which Amnesty International, because they have a research division along with Citizen Lab, who's in the Citizen Lab is in the Monk School of Global Affairs and Public Policy at the University of Toronto. But anyway, Amnesty said to Apple in 2019 that somehow iMessage was involved here, because just before Pegasus got installed on things, iMessage was somehow involved. Now, how long do you think it would take a company like Apple, with all their resources and all their trillions of dollars, to fix something like this?
About a day.
Almost 4 years.
Oh. Why?
That is a fantastic question, and I don't know the answer.
Unless you want to let it happen.
That is a possibility.
Does that mean a deal between security agencies using Pegasus? Tell me if I've got the dot joining wrong here. And Apple was a kind of thing.
That's potentially the case. I don't know if we'll ever know. Maybe one day we will. But you'd think that a company who makes the claim that, yes, we are privacy, we are this, you can trust us with your data and all that kind of thing, would actually take this kind of thing seriously.
Yeah.
But to take nearly 4 years, that's 4 years, you might as well say it was 100 years for the difference it makes, because that's an incredibly long time in the tech sector.
Yeah, especially if there's brand damage possible.
Mm.
Do we believe Andrew Little? I don't.
I have not seen evidence to suggest that I ought to.
Yeah, because they'll tell you anything. And why would a security agency want to pass up the opportunity to have that sort of access if they need it?
Exactly.
I wouldn't. Yeah,
you'd want to keep quiet because you could... you know, if you were a journalist and, you know, or you were an activist or something, then, and people have had this happen to them, government's not necessarily ours, but in the UAE, where it's not a terribly free society, have had this kind of thing happen to them because they just weren't in the government's good books.
No, I wouldn't pass up the opportunity. If I was them. No.
No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't.
I'd say keep on making it better.
Yeah. You can get tools. It's called the Mobile Verification Toolkit. Amnesty International have created this. It's a collection of tools that you can use to gather forensic traces to help you identify if your phone's compromised. This works on Android and Apple devices, and it's free open source software, so you can verify the software does what it says on the tin, which is what you always want. And one thing you can do, no matter what kind of phone you have, is if you are going somewhere where there is the possibility that you may be asked to surrender your phone, I'm thinking, you know, airports, for example.
Yeah.
They do random spot checks on people. The best thing for you to do is to switch the phone off.
Okay.
The reason for that is that when you switch the phone back on, that the phone enters a before first unlock state, or BFU. And that's when stuff on the phone is typically encrypted. Now, much older phones, they're still vulnerable for this, but newer models of pretty much everything. In that state, that phone is a whole lot harder to try and break into. There's a few different tools that that are out there, like Cellebrite has one, and there's other ones. And you got the back and forth cat and mouse game as to between operating systems, phone manufacturers, and security agencies. But turning off the phone before handing it over is the first thing to do.
Okay, that's handy to know. Yep.
And always stick a PIN code on your SIM card, because if someone takes the SIM card out then and puts it into another phone, then they can't access or they can't use your SIM card unless you enter in the PIN first, which is what I do when I switch my phone on. Got to enter in the PIN code for the SIM card, and then there's the one to get the phone started.
Oh, I didn't even know you could do that until now.
Yep. So I would definitely do it, because otherwise, you know, most phones still have the physical SIM card, which I prefer, because you can take it out and you know it's disabled, as opposed to eSIMs on more modern phones, where the SIM is basically electronic. That's how it exists. Mm. But yeah, stick a PIN code on it.
All right. Anything more to say about hacking?
No, but if I keep talking like this, I think I'll end up with a hacking cough.
Okay. No comment. All right, let's just whip around a few stories. Time always against us. Smart devices, washing machines, sending data? Really?
Washing machines? So this was something that actually, I've only just heard about it, but this happened back in January. So this guy who had bought an LG washing machine was perplexed when looking at the data traffic on his Asus router. I enjoy every opportunity I get to say that word on Tech Tuesday.
No comment.
Yep. So he observed that it was sending about 3.7 gigabytes of data every single day, and it's a washing machine. So why is a washing machine doing that?
That's a lot of gigabytes, did you say?
Yeah, 3.7.
That's a S-load of data from a washing machine?
Yes, so it turns out that it wasn't the washing machine.
Oh, okay.
So what he's attributing it down to is a couple of things. One, that it could have been the Asus router misreporting the data. And the other thing was that the washing machine was using the same port that iMessage on iPhones uses. So it was misreporting information. Bundling it together and sort of became a false positive. So while this is kind of funny, at the same time, it does raise a very important issue, because if you've got, you know, for example, smart fryers is another thing that's being talked about a lot lately, that, you know, you get a cheap air fryer, Black Friday deal, and then get it home and you use its smart app for whatever ridiculous reason you need to use an app for it in order to use a smart fryer.
Yeah, hello, can't you just get up off your ass and walk to where it is and push the buttons?
Yeah, well, these things apparently have microphones and stuff in them now, so for whatever
air
reason.
Air fryers have microphones in them.
Yeah, so.
Wow.
It's introducing another spying device into your house. And then if you've got a robot vacuum cleaner, so if your router has a compromised mechanism in it, or the app can and somebody can get into your robot vacuum cleaner, that thing's got a camera on it, hasn't it? Because it needs to be able to see inside your house.
Okay. So if there's so it's a live broadcast from the lounge.
Yeah.
Suddenly. Yeah.
Yes. So
only at foot level though.
Well, no, they can see up high.
Oh, can they? I know nothing about them. Never had one.
Yeah, so they've got a good field of view. Really, yeah. And they often scan things with lasers around as well, so they can get
okay,
a 3D
I'm not having
representation.
One of those. Not having one of those.
Don't. But the point is that software has vulnerabilities, right?
Yep.
So even iPhones and iPads, everyone thinks, no, they're tough as bricks. Well, yeah, nah. So something like a robot vacuum cleaner has vulnerabilities in it. Other software has vulnerabilities in it. You can bet top dollar that someone will be trying to break into these and finding vulnerabilities, and you hope that the manufacturer gets off their backside and fixes this el pronto. But if you happen to have an older model and the manufacturer no longer supports it, aren't producing software updates for it, you're screwed.
Yeah. I said buggered, so you said screwed.
Yeah. So
router router.
Don't play the game. As convenient as these toys might be.
And make an effort. Do the vacuuming physically. Major incident at UK hospitals. What's that?
Oh, boy. Yes. So what's happened here is that this is not the first time, not the second time, but the third time this year this has happened for these hospitals. So the NHS Trust, who's responsible for Arrow Park, Clatterbridge, Wirram Women and Children's Hospital, and a few others, they've had to stop more than 10,000 appointments and over 1,600 operations, including some for cancer treatments, because of this. And it's believed that almost a million people have had their sensitive medical data leaked online as part of the extortion attempt. So here we have ransomware again, and something kind of similar happened the Waikato DHB years ago. We have, and that was a Microsoft issue. Yeah, so bad news all around. So this is why it is a timely reminder to know where your data is and who's got it.
Yeah, and who can you trust? All right, real tight on time. Alexa has cost Amazon how much?
$25 billion, that's US, don't forget, in 4 years. The reason it's cost this much is because when they built Alexa and the Echo speakers that they sold for cheap, and in some cases at a loss, the idea was, we won't worry about making money now, we'll figure that out later on. And what they didn't count on was that most people are using Alexa for free services like checking the weather or asking what the time was, rather than making purchases through Amazon. And so a former senior employee told the Wall Street Journal, we're worried that we've hired 10,000 people and we've built a smart timer.
Yeah. Well, my dad uses Alexa because his eyesight's virtually non-existent. And that's what he does, is like, Alexa, the weather.
Mm.
Alexa, this, that, real simple demands. Never wants to buy anything, obviously. They thought that would be an on-ramp to massive Amazon purchases via Alexa. That was obviously the thinking.
Yeah, so now they're thinking about sticking in a subscription service, which might be, you know, $5-$10 a month. And
So you got to pay for it to ask those simple questions.
Well, you know, terms and conditions change, don't they?
Yeah, all right. $25 billion.
That's a lot of money. And they have laid off at least 19,000 workers at Amazon since 2022. And their devices division, who created Alexa, were apparently hit the hardest.
Okay. The voice of Alexa, is that a computer voice, or is that a sample of a real voice? Do we know? I've wondered that.
Yeah, I'm not too sure. Although I recall there was an episode of Big Bang Theory when Rajesh was fantasizing about Siri. Siri is actually based upon a real woman's voice.
Yeah. And what, they get royalties every time a word is uttered? I wonder how I can get in on that.
Yeah, sell your voice.
Yeah, why not? All right, I think we've come up against time. Any last comments or points you want to make about what we've been talking about, Stephen?
Be careful out there.
Okay. Hill Street Blues, let's play the theme, shall we?
Yes.
All right, Stephen, good to catch up. We've got a couple more chats to come before the end of the year. We'll see you next Tuesday.
Sounds good. See you then.
The RCR Shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more, the RCR Shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.